Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio program. I'm Susan Larison-Dans, and today I am so very delighted to be welcoming back to the show our regular guest, Dr. Robert Moorman. And today we are going to explore an interesting, I guess I would say, intersection of two areas where Robert has spent a lot of time reflecting. And we are going to look at the synergy between mysticism and intimacy. And let me tell you, for those of you unfamiliar with Dr. Foreman, let me tell you just a little bit more about his areas of expertise and where he's been spending his time lately. He is one of the top experts on mysticism, and he is a professor of comparative religions with 20 years experience, a PhD from Columbia University, and professorships at City University of New York and Vassar College. He has written over 10 books, and he's the co-founder of the Journal on Consciousness Studies. So I'm framing this for you, audience. There is the mysticism piece of this regular guest that we so enjoy having on the show. The other aspect of Dr. Robert Foreman is very heartfelt and personal. He is the creator of a new program called Soul Jazz, which is all about bringing soul to life and relationships. He also wrote a very honest, heartfelt, and critically acclaimed memoir called Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be, A Journey of Discovery, Snow, and Jazz in the Soul. And that is an exploration of over 39 years of quite a fascinating spiritual journey, exploring different avenues to enlightenment and reflecting upon that honestly. Robert is also a counselor, and he does provide one-on-one assistance through his spiritual counseling. So these are all the aspects of our guest today, Dr. Robert Foreman. And right before I bring him on the line, I just want to refer you to his websites. SoulJazzOnline.com is one of his websites, and also EnlightenmentAint.com. And let me just remind you also, he is also the founder and director of the Forge Institute for Spirituality and Social Change. And if you listened to my show last week with Phil Goldberg, he is also a part of that. So I am just so happy to bring back on the show Dr. Robert Foreman. Although there we go. Hello, Bob. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. And I must say that introduction got me to think about the fact that the stuff we're going to talk about today is in many ways culmination or the sort of focus of what my life actually has been about. So thank you for doing that. I mean, I've been thinking about this, but it didn't occur to me. I actually have developed these as professional lives. So I guess what I have to talk about today, I guess I do know something about. Who knew?
Well, I think you do. And you know what's so funny is I spontaneously created that in the moment. because it just seems very. I don't write my introductions usually, and it just seemed like that's exactly. You know, I'm an old math major, right? So I saw this Venn diagram in my head. I mean, I was just seeing. You know, look at how these subsets of Bob, of the things that you've studied, how they interact with one another, and isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
We're gonna explore that.
Thank you for seeing me as a Venn diagram. I think it's a good Venn diagram. I like it a lot.
Well, it's a very interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, on the surface, people might think, you know, how do these overlap? And yet, I think you're beginning to discover how, and we'll just explore and go with it today. And I'm going to let you frame how you want to enter into this, whether you want to enter into it from the mysticism angle or the intimacy angle or a little bit of both. So I'm just going to toss the ball to you
and let you go. I'd like to start by telling the story of how I came to this.
Yes.
And I think that might help us the most. My own life, I think like so many people, start out, you know, in my struggles coming out of childhood. You know, I was really quite depressed and very lonely and very cut off from both myself and other people. And so as a result of that, I was in a lot of pain. I was struggling with depression. I was struggling with constant anxiety. And, you know, I was basically a really screwed up young man. And I tried a lot of different things. I describe this in the book Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be. But I tried a lot of different things when I was 20-ish or so. I tried Zen and yoga and psychotherapy, and I didn't know what to do. But ultimately, I stumbled into transcendental meditation, which became my path. It's not the only path, but it's a good path for me, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I discovered there the experience of sort of silence, wide open silence. And after a few years of practicing meditation, as you know, Susan, and I describe in Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be, after a few years of practicing meditation, lo and behold, this silence that I'd been experiencing in meditation occasionally kind of established itself in my life. And the way that experience came to me was, I mean, it came in a series of sort of steps, but the ultimate product of those steps was that I had this experience of sensing a silence, not so much out there, not so much separate from me, but rather merged into what I am or as what I am, so that the sense of looking out, you know, I'm looking at trees outside my study window. The sense of looking out started at that time being I was looking out there, but I also recognized that what I was this sense of silence, this sense of sort of effortlessness.
Yes.
And over the years, that sense of silence became more and more, as it were, palpable. It's like it spread out through the rest of my body, and then it spread out towards the world. And I think the critical thing, as I look back on this path of mine, I think the critical thing for me was that the sense of silence was me. It was, I had no feeling at all of defense against this sense of silence, but rather it just was me. I didn't have to push it away in any way because it's just what I was and still am. And that sense of being connected with something other than this little personality or, you know, the pen that I hold in my hand or my body, having the sense of being connected with something more deeply even than I'm connected with my own body, was the first time that I've ever experienced anything without defense, without pushing it away, without the feeling that it's dangerous and I got to watch out for it. You know, all that I had done up to that point and everything in my life other than silence, I had some defense towards. Now, it's not to say I was different than everybody else, but it is to say that we all carry some teeny or strong sense of sort of we have to protect ourselves. We have to kind of put up our hands over against the world. We have to kind of create walls to keep the world at bay. We don't want people to know us quite or touch us quite. So that the mysticism became this sense of accepting something in the world.
Yes.
And then over the years, what I began to realize was that the loneliness that I had been so struggling with and the depression that had kept me so estranged from the world had both begun to lift a little bit, and I was starting to accept the world, as it were, more into me, or I was starting to encounter the world with fewer defenses. I think that's kind of what began to happen. And then something happened just in the last 5-10 years, and I'm now 66, and this thing's been with me for 40 years. But I would say in the last 5 years, I've actually started to allow people to touch that deep sense of who I am. And I think the strongest piece of that has been with my grandson, and now my granddaughter, who's just born. She's about 3 months old. But with my grandson, he's now 3.5. The kind of model that I think I have told you about, Susan, but it has been a model for me, is as I was changing his diaper, I had this little pattern of leave him be on his table, and he'd be looking at me, and I'd be looking at him, and I'd sing a particular song to him, and it doesn't matter what it was. It happened to be Kev Moe's song called Life's Beautiful. It's a really sweet little song. Aww. But I'd sing this song to him, and I would look at him without blinking, and he would look at me without blinking, and there was nothing that I was keeping. There was no sense at all that I was keeping him at bay, that I was holding him at a distance. I just plain allowed him in. And the thing that strikes me now is that allowing him in, and I can say that there have now been other people, including his sister and dear friends and even my wife, which is the hardest of them all, but I've now been able to allow other people to touch me in that same sense of having no hand held up over against them. And I've come to think that mysticism is a way that some of us have, and I don't think all of us have quite this pattern, but is a way that some of us have of getting used to or practicing being in the world with no defense. And I think mysticism is an experience in a very particular area of being in the world with no defense. In that case, it's accepting silence into your, absolutely, totally into your soul. And the experience is a practice of letting others to touch you at the level of soul and to be that open to other people. So somehow I've begun to feel like these dots are connected in a way I never was able to see before. That I think we're talking about the same thing. Intimacy, in other words, the ability or the willingness to allow somebody else to touch us, really,
yes.
really touch us.
And it's
us.
Good to clarify that. What do we mean by intimacy exactly? Because, you know, there's the very limited definition, and you really look at it in a much broader sense. I mean, we can be intimate in so many ways in our lives.
Yeah, a lot of people hear the word intimacy and they immediately think sexual intimacy.
That's right.
Or I'm only intimate with my spouse, or I'm only intimate with my mother. Not what I'm pointing to. For me, intimacy is the experience of allowing other people to see you without any or without much protection.
Yeah.
So that when I'm willing to explore out loud what I don't yet know and where I am actually still learning is a kind of marker for me of allowing somebody to see the real me. And that's kind of what intimacy is. So that you can be intimate with somebody and never touch them. You can be intimate. I feel very intimate with some people, and it's always on the telephone. I've never actually seen some of these folks because I do a lot of phone work. And so it's you know, I think that intimacy does not have to be physical. It does not have to be here, right here. But I think it's an enormous gift to be able to do that. And I think that, anyway, so the point I'm trying to get to is that intimacy, that this kind of intimacy, is, I actually want to say, none other than the mystical sense of connection.
Yes. You know, if I might say something, as you were speaking, I just had this beautiful realization, Bob, that, you know, when my son was born, and it's interesting how children, it's not surprising that children would connect us to this, because I'll tell you, when he was born, I went through a lot. I had a very, very hard delivery, and he was very high demand. He had various issues that made him cry a lot, and yet when I would feed him, or he was sitting quietly in my lap at times, I would get lost in his eyes. His eyes were like an ocean, and they were beautiful. I mean, they were multicolored, and I could look in those eyes, and everything was okay. Exactly. And now that I think about it, because at that time in my life, I hadn't really had a powerful mystical experience. Later, I did. And it was very similar. I mean, there was that spontaneous surrender. Like, it just captures you out of the blue. And there you are. And it just, without that, I'm not sure I could have easily made it through, which was a very, very hard time in my life, because I actually had postpartum depression at one point, although it was mostly anxiety with me. You and I both share some anxiety things in our past, so I so relate to that. And it's no wonder the kid wouldn't let me sleep. I mean, I could only sleep for like an hour at a time, and it was really hard. But those eyes, there was something there. And as you're talking, I felt it. I mean, I know that that was it. You know, it. That thing.
Yeah, and I think people are so longing for that it. People are so longing for real connection. And I think this often happens between, especially mothers and babies. And for me as a grandfather, I mean, I loved my children and I still love my children. But this sense of being there without any agenda and any work. I mean, well, I was very busy when I was having kids. You know, you're building a career and you want to take care of them. You want to be responsible. You're worried about money. It's like the whole thing.
Sure.
You're very preoccupied when you're a parent. But as a grandparent, I just love this kid and these kids, actually. And that ability that to be with somebody in a way that you just love them. You just are there with them. I'm not, even love doesn't quite catch it. It's like you're just there with them. It doesn't. It's not love or hate. It's just totally present. It's more that quality. And I think that that's, again, I think that that's kind of what the mystical thing is giving us. And I think in a case like yours, you might have had, and I think this makes all the sense in the world to me, you might have had the experience of undefended intimacy before you had the mystical experience.
Yes.
But I think that in many ways, the two, you know, having those mystical experiences allows you to deepen in love. And then having the experience of intimacy can allow you to touch into the mystical even more easily, even more readily, I think. So that I want to say that the spiritual path is helping us develop an interpersonal path. And the interpersonal path maybe to helping us develop a mystical spiritual path.
Well, maybe it's because, Bob, that, you know, when we say the mystical, sometimes it can sound so abstract. And yet when you really experience it, I mean, it's love. I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense that it would be related because it's just, I mean, I can't even put it in words. That's why we tend to use the terms like it, because it just, it's overwhelming love. I mean, that's part of what I find. And yet even that doesn't quite capture it completely. But
I I've got another weird view of all this, and
uh-huh.
this might just be just because of who I am or how I've come to think about this stuff. But you know, my experience is and was that in the beginning of my spiritual path, early on, when I would have some experience, I'd sort of be in meditation or be out for a walk in the woods, and I would sort of drop into this place, and I would go, wow, this is so
yes.
cool, and it's pure love, and it was, and it's so, in many ways, it was very exciting. I often call that the neon light form of this.
Yeah, that's a different,
you know, it's like
right.
it's the lights flash, and your hair stands on end, it's like, woohoo. You know, but then when I was 24, and as you know from enlightenment, ain't what it's cracked up to be, something happened to me that was permanent. The shift became
yes.
just who I was. Well, the experiences that were so exciting in the beginning became just what I was.
Yes.
So the experience of being wide open that I had known just for 10 seconds at a time, the experience of being very connected in to something very deep,
yes.
It just became the nature of my everyday life, the experience of what I like to think of as effortlessness and a certain kind of openness to other people. It just became sort of part of the thing. So that in the beginning, mysticism did carry that, I like to call it the whoopee quality of spirituality.
The wow factor,
you know, it's like
the whoopee quality.
The wow factor.
Yes.
It carried a lot of wow factor. But then as you live with this stuff longer and longer, it's not wow at all. It's just like, yeah, this is just what I am. It's like, oh, yeah. You know, so the way
uh-huh.
this stuff became for me was that, well, as I'm talking to you now, and I'm saying to you, you know, as I look at the tree outside my window, I feel a sense of no distance between me and the tree. I can feel the tree sort
yeah.
of on the right side of my chest. It's just where I feel it, you know, so that there's no separation between me and the world. And that's just the way it is. So that for me, it the quality of love is I want to say for me, it kind of comes out to be the quality of being really undefended from somebody,
yes.
really present to somebody.
Yes.
You know
what
I mean?
You're helping
and so
me.
It's,
yes. Well, let me say.
So it's in there
yes.
that I want to say that, you know, love has to do with how I engage another person. Am I engaging them without any resistance? Am I engaging them without any judgment? I'm just present. It's like, oh yeah,
yes.
I hear you. You know, it's like it's almost that simple. Just, but generally, when we say, oh yeah, I hear you, we're also hearing a zillion other thoughts. But if you could say, oh yeah, I really hear you, and nothing else is true for you, that you're hearing them, you know, that has a whole different level of connection. And it's that kind of connection, I want to say, is what you get in mysticism, and it prepares you or trains you to be that connected to human beings sometimes. And your experience with your baby, to
That's
some extent,
it.
Prepared you to touch into that level
yes.
of the divine.
You know, I want to say that I think that for me, given that in some ways this path is still relatively new. I mean, 10 years is not that much time. I mean, 11 years, I mean, that doesn't count my baby experience. But the wow factor, I still experience it, that astonishing factor. And yet, this is what I thought of as you were talking, Bob. When I compare that to that feeling with my baby, I realized after the wow, it's like after the thunder, there's
yeah.
this space, and that's it. That's
yeah.
the space that was in my baby's eyes. And
mm.
that's like the peace. It's like after the wave crashes on the shore. See, I'm still like, oh, my God, look at that wave.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because it's still cool. I mean, it's still, that can happen. And then I'm still starting to see what's the receding after the wave. And
mm-hmm.
see, this is part of my learning process. And I'm
yeah.
synergizing
yeah.
right here on this show. We're both doing this today. I love it when this happens on
yeah.
the show because
yeah.
I'm seeing that in my baby's eyes, the receding of the crash of the wave upon the shore.
Yeah, or another way you can
surrender.
Another way you can think about that, Susan, is that the quality of silence. Well, I'll talk about my own experience here, but I have a feeling it's the same thing. For me, the quality of silence that came on when I was 24 and still is with me.
Mm-hmm.
Has, you know, you can describe it as silence. That is to say, it doesn't have a whole lot of verbiage associated with it. It's not noisy. It's just sort of quiet. But it also has the sense of being wide open or spacious or vast. My favorite word for it is the vastness, the vastness. And so that the vastness is what this stuff is like when you kind of get used to it. It's so that it, in the beginning, it was just like localized in a particular part of my brain. But if I put my attention on what it was inside of itself, it was almost dizzying. It was so big. It was, you know, you almost didn't have any moorings. So that the sense of wide openness, so that, that quality of being wide open, of being spacious, is, I think, the kind of thing that you're describing when you were sort of looking into your child's eyes, of just sort of pouring of yourself out into those eyes and just almost extending to envelop or embrace the child with your eyes. And I think that that is exactly the way this stuff feels. So that when you're not defended, you know, imagine you've got your hand up between you and your baby. That's what defense feels like. And it makes you smaller. You know, you can only see about 6 inches now. You can't see around the child. It makes you need to feel like you need to protect yourself. All of those things are true when you're defended. But if you're wide open to your child, in effect, you feel a quality that is vast. You feel wide open. You feel unprotected, like there's no edges to you or no boundaries to you.
Yeah.
And I think that is precise. Well, I know that's precisely what the quality of silence is. That silence is vast. It is unbound. It is without boundaries. It is wide open. The quality is openness and unprotectedness. So that the quality you're describing with your baby and that I have felt with my grandchildren is the same quality as the quality of what you get when you get used to, or what you get in mysticism, what you get when you're sort of enjoying that those moments or that shift in yourself.
Yes, I'm really starting to see this. There is a connection. Let me say something to the audience real quick. I see that there's a caller on the line, and I want to make sure if they're listening to the teleconference, simply listening, that's good. But if you actually want to ask a question, you need to press 1. So I should advise, seems we're attracting callers these days during the day sometimes, and I'm just letting the caller know that if you have a question, you have to press 1. Otherwise, I won't bring you on because you may just be listening. And if anyone has a question, I mean, that number is 310-807-5104. So just letting the audience know that, and thanks for being with us today. So, all right, well, Bob, you just... You know, I'm really thinking about this in terms of parenting, too. It's not just parenting. It's that connection. It's in these vital relationships that we have. I needed that at that time. I needed that to be there. It provided a kind of peace and a healing element that I actually needed. Much different than if
you're talking about
my
with your child or with somebody else.
Yes. It's much different because he was a high demand child at that age. And I think it was as if, you know, the universe, to use a broad term, knew that I needed that element. And boy, I could just stay in that ocean for a very long time. I mean, it's what gave me peace. And I sense it's what gave him peace, which is interesting because, you know, later I found out that he had a form of colic and physical distress, and we knew there were some issues. And somehow, I don't know what his issue was exactly, but he had some things that were troubling him, and yet he found peace in that. He must have found peace. He was looking in my eyes. I mean, I don't know. What does a baby see? A baby is connected to everything. I mean, who knows? But I sensed that that was absolutely vital for him to rest in this place and for me to rest in the same space with him. And that's what I was seeing.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think it brings up a couple of really interesting points. First of all, that if I am fully awake to another person,
yes,
if I am not at all defended to another person, one of the things I find so remarkable about that is that it has, that fact alone has a seriously healing quality to it for,
yes,
both me and the other person.
Yes.
When I'm that unprotected with another person, they feel it, and it is like food. It is so nourishing.
Yes.
And it's sort of what we all long for in our relationships, and it's that sense of just delicious energy from another person. I have no,
yes,
question in my mind that when you felt that with your son,
uh-huh,
that despite the fact he would never, ever, 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 ever be able to say this, I have no question that he felt it. I have no,
uh-huh,
doubt at all. Because when I'm with another person and they're really, really there with me, it's like we almost don't have to say anything. You just smile. It just feels so rich. It's like,
yeah,
healthy food, and you were giving him a certain kind of food. But I also want to say that you said, and you stressed this several times, that you really needed that time because,
yeah,
he was a high-demand child.
Right.
And you really, and then you said it's like the universe supplied this to you almost. And I can say, without a question of a doubt, that I really needed that kind of contact with silence. It was a huge gift to me.
Yes.
And it was a gift to my very troubled soul, and it had an enormously helpful impact on my life and,
yes,
on me at the time. By the time I started meditation, I was no longer suicidal, but I was sure as hell struggling with depression. And being able to touch into silence, even though it wasn't a cure-all, and it didn't make everything just wonderful, it did not make everything just wonderful, there's no question in my mind that it helped. It really helped, just being able to flow into that and know that flow and know the quality of nourishment that comes from that sort of presence. So, yeah, I think there is something about this, you know, this sort of experience, both in mysticism, but also with another human being, that,
yeah,
does feel very nourishing and very alive and very generous, as it were, in the gift that it is. And I think it's a great boon to us. I think it's enormously helpful. So,
yes,
yeah, I'm completely with you on that. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, and another comparison for me, because I'm so different than so many people on my show, which is what is fun about it in a way, is that I'm just entering into the practices. I mean, so many of you have been practicing and, you know, doing all these spiritual practices of meditation or yoga. And I was telling Phil Goldberg, for example, on the last week's show, that I've only recently started yoga. And, you know, it's just because I didn't think I was coordinated enough to do it. Well, that's really not true. So for anyone listening, I want to remind them out there that if you have a good teacher who is patient, although they will require things of you, I will say that. but still, there's an element there. You really can do it, but there is this part, and this is what I want to get at. And I am so new at this, I'm not even going to have the right term, I'm not even going to try to use it, but there is something I have discovered, and you just breathed it. I mean, it's that surrender. There's one part where it's surrendering as if dying. And I have breathed like never before in my life. And I thought, you know, I know this sounds kind of silly for me to say, but I actually had this realization, which is so obvious, like, my God, these people really know what they're talking about, that, you know, they've studied how to position yourself exactly so you can breathe, because for me, breathing has been a problem all my life. Yeah. It's been hard for me to swim. It's been, you know, I have allergies or have had them. They're getting better. But suddenly I realized, you know what, these people actually know ways for me to be positioned perfectly and advise, you know, tell me just the right thing so that finally I can breathe. And it's like breathing for the first time. And so I'm here I am just discovering this now, and all of you guys have known it, you know, for decades, but it's a wonderful thing, and it's exactly what you're talking, and it's similar to what I felt with my child. I am drawing again that same parallel that you know, the there's something to the breathing, obviously, and it's similar.
Yeah, I think what you're describing in yoga, most people when they breathe, there's a kind of a series of small catches in your breath. You breathe a little of it. It's sort of like you breathe like this when you're going in.
Yes.
I mean, it's not even close to that obvious and close to that noisy, but, you know, there's little tiny catches, both breathing in, but also there's a kind of, when you breathe out, there's, a little kind of, like there's a little hump in there, like you're dealing with some sort of a sine wave almost of breathing and then not, and breathing and then not. So, I think that the practice of whatever, meditation, yoga, there's a wonderful practice in Zen Buddhism called it's a walking meditation.
Uh-huh.
Kinhin. Where you're standing up fully straight and you're just paying attention to all the sensations under your feet and your legs, and you learn what it is to take a step and just be able to take a step effortlessly. Mm. So that effort, the key here in what you're describing in the breathing and the key in Kinhin and the key in meditation, when this stuff is really working for you, the key is that you do these things without extra effort.
Yes.
That the whole thing has a kind of an ease to it. When you were looking in your son's eyes, when I've been engaging with my grandson in this way, there's the key is that I can be engaged without any work. Or another word that's quite common for this sort of thing is flow. You know, that when you're breathing in that way, you're in the flow, or your breath comes as a flow. It's like it takes no work. So to think of how much work it takes to be defended against another person versus really, really allowing them to contact you. There's no work there whatsoever. When you're really present to another person and they're really present to you, the whole thing has a kind of a flow to it. So here's another quality that is common to both mysticism, the experience of silence by yourself, and the quality of intimacy. In intimacy, the kind of conversation that you engage in with another person, if you're really being free, takes no work because there's nothing to be protected about. There's nothing to be defended against. So, I think you're pointing to something that's quite similar when we talk about that sort of effortlessness of breathing and effortlessness in what you do. And you said finding the right position. I think it's not about finding the right position so much as learning what it is to allow yourself to be, period.
Yes.
Learning what it is to just be.
Yes. Yes, and you know what's interesting about it, and maybe this is true in intimacy too, when you're in it, and this is true of, again, using the analogy of my baby and also yoga, when I'm in it, wow doesn't interject. This really isn't about the wow, because at the time, it's just so wonderful. It's like floating, you know, and you're floating, and it's just, you know. And then you don't really think about the wow. until later you think, wow, what, you know, that was pretty amazing. You know, maybe later you think that that was astonishing, you know, and mm-hmm. but in the moment, you're not in the wow. You're just in the ease.
The
just like you say, you are totally in the moment and just so enjoying that moment.
It's
that's
just,
all there
easy.
Is. I
the
mean,
whole
it
thing
occupies
is,
it.
Yeah, the whole thing is easy. Yeah, very much so. But imagine that you stayed in that experience.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a wonderful book called The Experience of No Self by Bernadette Roberts, and she describes that she used to go into silence and then come out, go in and come out, and she would say, or she said at some point that generally I'd start to get afraid and it would pull me out of the silence. And she said this one time, fear didn't come, and lo and behold, she stayed in the silence. So imagine what it would be, Susan, if you were to experience one of those moments and be in that flow in the moment. And you said accurately, when you come out of that moment, you think, wow. But imagine what it would be like to be in that moment of being fully connected like that and not come out.
Yes.
Just stay there.
Yes.
The wow factor never comes up. It's just, you're just there. You're a wide open.
Yes.
And you can have the thought, wow, you know, but that, it doesn't sort of touch it because you're just in it. You're so wide open, so connected to whatever it is that you're experiencing that there's no effort involved. The whole thing is a flow. Well, that's what it is in mysticism, and just imagine what it is that you, if you were with other people or another person in a way that there was no protection, no defense.
Yes.
Again, the wow wouldn't come up. You're just there. You're just in love.
Yes.
You're just totally
you're
open.
You're just there. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's where, you know, you really do have something that lingers. Like, I mean, that I could see how those kinds of intimate connections, I mean, they will stay with you even after the person is gone off the earth. I mean, I think that in some way it would stay, I would have to believe, which, you know, that does bring up something. It seems like, you know, when we do let fear get in the way, don't we, in the sense that, okay, we experience this amazing connection, however, or amazing makes it almost too wow-like, but however you want to, what we're talking about. And then sometimes we let fear get in the way, like, I don't want this to go away, you know, at that kind of fear, because you just, and that could interfere with the energy of the flow if we allowed it. And I wonder if you could address that, Bob, that intrinsic element that I think can cause some interference. Are you there? Uh-oh. I was worried about going away and you disappeared. Are you there? Hello?
I think my headphone must have stopped working there.
Here, wait.
Can you hear me okay? Susan, can you hear me?
Can you hear me, Bob?
There will be an echo.
I can hear you.
Okay, hold on.
I can hear you.
I'm switching phones.
Good. Hello?
There we go. Are you there?
Yeah, I think so. I think your guy muted me.
You can hear me, though?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you now. It looks like the main line went out. What probably happened is people didn't hear me. Surprisingly, no one heard me for a minute or so. It's been doing that occasionally. But anyway, I'm on the second backup line now, which may sound a little. Here, let me just make one adjustment. Okay, that's better. So,
okay.
So let's just continue with the second line.
Okay. I wanted to tell you a story. If you'll recall, the question that you asked is, what is the role of fear in all this?
Yes.
And I think you're onto something. Again, your radio show, of course, is called Pathways Beyond Fear.
Yes.
So first I'll tell you a little story, and then I'll tell you about how I do think about fear, and I think the fear has a role here. the story is, one of the early experiences I had when I felt myself connected to the world in a way that the world outside, I felt more connected to it. I was in Colorado, and something happened, and I kind of shifted into this very wide open space, and I could sense the silence that I was now used to, and describe the experience in enlightenment ain't what it's cracked up to be, but I was used to experiencing silence inside, but this day the silence all of a sudden I realized was outside of me, and I could sense the silence. It was almost like a cloud. I could sense this silent openness in the mountains and in the cattle around me. This was in Colorado, in the road that I was driving on, et cetera. And then, I went into a restaurant, and I could sense it in the woman that was my waitress, and it was really quite magnificent. And because it was so unusual, I'd never experienced anything like that. But anyway, then I go down to the airport. I drive down the hill, and I go to the airport, and I'm now in this, this gorgeous Colorado airport, and I could sense the silence all around me, and I could sense it on the concourse where people were walking up and down, and I could hear it under the suitcases as they rolled down the way, and I could hear all this stuff, and at some point I began to realize, oh, my God, I have no protection from all these people. I'm afraid, and I realized that it was just too much openness for me to handle, that I was
especially
afraid.
Especially in an airport, wherever
it was. It could have been the streets of New York, but wherever it was, I was wide open, and that scared me. And I think that fear, and here's where your question comes into play, I think that fear is essential. When we are too open, we do get afraid, and it tends to bring us out of these mystical moments or these sorts of experiences. And what they're saying, what the sense of fear is saying is, that my ego, my strength is not enough. My ego is not well enough built that I can handle being alive with so little defense. Yeah. So the sense of fear is a sign that I'm not quite ready for this yet.
Yeah.
And if people get this experience too soon, a lot of people get pretty freaked out by it. There's a lot, to be that open to folks and that undefended in the world. So I think that fear is saying there's a kind of self-protection that we need until we don't. And the more strength you build within your own ego structure, and the more you are confident about what you are and who you are, and the more connected you feel, the less you need that protection, the less you need of those defenses. So fear is basically saying, I'm sorry, Bob, you're not ready yet. And so I listen to it. And if you're afraid, there's nothing you can do about it. It's fine. You just pull back in like a tortoise pulling its little legs back in. You pull yourself back in and you keep building your ego until at some point you'll be ready to be wide open to the world and wide open to other people in intimacy in a way that you don't need self-protection. And I think then, it's kind of a natural process, I think. It's kind of... when you're ready to be open, you open, and then at some point you probably aren't, and then you pull back. And so I find the same thing happening with intimacy, that I can be intimate with some very dear friends, and I can be intimate in more and more conversations, and I've learned how to teach intimacy and really get some kind of more focused on that. And then recently I find that I'm even able to do that with my wife, which has been the hardest of all, because you really need protection from somebody you're that close to. And it's only when you sort of are strong enough and trusting enough and wide open enough that even there you don't need much in the way of protection. You're okay with what it is.
Yeah.
So that I think that fear that you're describing, I think we can find pathways beyond it. But I also think when it comes up, we should take it seriously. And it's not like it's a bad thing. Rather, what it's saying is you're not ready yet. And so it's a good thing. It's a kind of marker for it.
Yeah.
I think in that sense, it's valuable.
As you're talking, I can't help but think about being a new student of yoga, maybe even when you're a more advanced student. There are times the teacher's going to want me to do my best, but there are times when I know I'm going to injure I can't do this just yet. And you kind of have to learn, because I've actually, probably every new student of yoga pulls a muzzle or does something at the beginning because you're trying too hard or whatever. You're really
trying to.
And at some point you learn, okay, you know, I'm not quite ready to hold that long or whatever.
And
it's similar. It's similar. It's a warning sign. It's just like, it's fine. You'll be ready. Just, you know, be patient. it'll come. And if you have a good
the same is true in intimacy, by the way. If you're too eager and you're not really ready to be okay in yourself, you know, you can scare people. You can scare people off. It's like, ooh, they're being a little icky here. You know, it's too much. What's the phrase modern kids use? Too much sharing, too much information.
Oh,
TMI,
yeah.
Too much information.
We've talked about that before. Yes, we've talked about this on the show before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, so, that can come up in many ways. It's true. You know, it requires listening to cues in a way. I've found, and some of us don't seem to be as well trained in that sometimes. I don't know. I guess it's just a matter of learning. But, you know, you can just get too engaged, maybe. And I've seen this happen in spiritual settings with, you know, when everyone's engaged in the wow factor, is we're just hyper. And it can happen there because then you're not listening and you have to ease off.
Right. So I think the fear that we feel, and this is kind of what you're pointing to, I think the fear that we fear, when we become afraid and we feel some fear, it is a marker of we don't have enough strength here in this particular way. We are too eager or too something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the challenge, I can say that the challenge of my life has been, can I get myself even stronger yet? So that fear doesn't need to come up. And I would say that I've seen this kind of quantum leap of, oh, I don't have to be afraid of that anymore either. I've seen this kind of quantum leap come up over the years a few times. So that it used to be I was afraid of the external world and, you know, afraid of letting go into mysticism and then more recently afraid to let go with another person and really make myself vulnerable and make myself open and undefended with other people. So I think what we're pointing to here is a kind of natural and humane process, you know.
Yes.
That this is the path that we're sort of all on, as it were.
Yes, I wonder if part of flow, Bob, isn't really just even recognizing when you're if you think of flow, like if you're hitting up against a barrier, so, you know, you think of a river hitting some obstruction or whatever, where it's like, okay, you know, I flowed well here, and now I'm kind of bumping up against something, and so then you just recognize that. I wonder if it's just something you learn to do.
Yeah, I think, well, I can say without a question that my experience has been that as time has gone on, I've been in that sense of flow or that sense of openness more and more.
Yes.
And then as at some point, when I lost that sense of flow, I could flow rather smoothly back into it. So that there's a sense of openness, and then when the openness gets sort of resisted, you can kind of come back to it. And then you come back quicker and quicker with less and less struggle. So you can let your defenses go more and more. I think that's the process that we're engaged in. It's not that we don't have difficulties, but rather that you can let go of the difficult moments and you can let go of the sense of defense a little more readily. Yes,
that makes sense. Yes. Yes, I so love the undefended way of thinking about it. It really is a helpful way of thinking about it. Now we are getting into the last, I guess we're in the last 5 minutes or so of the program, and I wonder, since we seem to have reached kind of a natural pause in this reflection, it's maybe you could talk. It's been a few programs since you've talked about soul jazz at all, and I wonder, you know, in your parting words here, if you could once again let us know what's going on with soul jazz and all of your work. And then, of course, always a thank you to you, Bob, for being here. This was a really interesting conversation. I'm going to really be thinking about this one. We went into some interesting areas. So anyway, I thought I'd give you that opportunity.
Well, thank you. Yeah, just for folks that are listening, the Soul Jazz website is called SoulJazzOnline, all one word, .com, SoulJazzOnline.com. And Soul Jazz is designed to do exactly what we're talking about. We work with people and develop a series of tools and techniques for folks in which they can develop their skills of being more open with other people. Primarily, of course, it's openness with yourself, but it's openness with self and other. And it applies that sense of openness that we can get in mysticism or that we carry to some extent. It brings that sense of openness into our relationship. There's a woman named Brené Brown that does a lot of work on what it takes to make somebody happy. And she said that people that are really happy have really open hearts. And what does it take to be open-hearted, she asked. And the conclusion she came to, and I couldn't agree more, is that to get an open heart, to be happy in your life, requires that you allow yourself and make yourself vulnerable sometimes with folks. And that sense of being willing to be vulnerable, the willingness to take a risk, is such a gift for people. And so we talk about what it is to be vulnerable and what the marks of that are and how to kind of move into that and how to move into it safely so you're not making yourself vulnerable at some times. So that the Soul Jazz program is designed to help you sort of enliven your own life and enliven your soul. Now, the reason we call it Soul Jazz is that when you do this with another person, there's a kind of mutual improvisational quality that comes up. You know, you talk about something, and then I talk about something, and you talk about something. And together, we're sort of discovering what it is to be us and what it is to be a human being and what it is to be alive. And so there's a kind of jazz quality to it, a kind of improvisational quality. And I find that just the most fun. You know, it's the coolest way to be is when you can be with other people in that wide open, kind of creative, hey, what the hell is happening really, really with you? And so the Soul Jazz program is designed to do that. And I must say, it seems to be going very well. There's a website. We've got a new thing on the website called the Life Satisfaction Checkup that people might want to check into on the site. No, I just put it up finally yesterday. So
yeah,
please do take a look. Take the test. Give it to your friends. It's really a very cool thing to do, and it helps people kind of reflect on their own lives. There's no grades given. It's just a fun test to take and a fun kind of checkup you can give yourself. So anyway, that's something that is another piece of this. And I must say, Susan, I'm very gratified because when people take this program, I'm seeing them come alive, and I'm seeing them become more happy in themselves. There's one woman I'm working with right now that she said it's ever since she started having the Soul Dance program around, she said it's like I got pixie dust all over me. It's just I feel happy. I'm more alive. You know, it's like I'm having real relationships with folks. It's really fun. So yeah,
well, that's what you want.
I think that's great.
That's wonderful to hear. I mean, it's really in the lives changed that these programs reflect themselves. So well, I'm glad that you let us know. Well, yes, thank you again for being on the show. And thank you once again,
Susan, for running these shows and being such a good conversationalist and for bringing this kind of thoughtful quality to other people. I think it's good work, and I'm glad to be part of it, glad to help you do it.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoy it. You know, it's a lot like what we talk about. I mean, a lot of the times it's quite effortless. I mean, I just enjoy it. It's a true joy. So thank you for being here again, and hope you have a wonderful, I guess it's about evening where you're at.
Well, actually, next week, I'm looking forward to this. Next week, I'm taking a motorcycle trip down the west side of Virginia. There's a great huge park of mountains down there, and so my buddy and I are going to take a motorcycle ride for a whole week. I'm really looking forward to it.
Wow, that sounds like fun. That's great. So I hope you enjoy. Thanks again for being here. So you take care.
All right. Thank you, Susan.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye. Just a quick show note before the show goes down, the live show. The next show, real quick, just go to frontierbeyondfear.com for the full schedule. And the next show is Tuesday, June 3rd, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. I have an old friend coming on. Her name is Shelley Dressel, and she has quite an active spiritual community around her. She is an intuitive, and we are going to just have a fun evening of guidance and discussion. And I'm really looking forward to that. So that's Tuesday, June 3rd at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. And keep an eye on frontierbeyondfear.com for future shows. Reminding you always, this is a listener-supported broadcast, and I do welcome your support if it's feeding your soul and you feel so inclined. I always welcome your support, and you can go to frontierbeyondfear.com to learn how to do that. So thanks again, everyone, for being here. I surely, it was that kind of conversation today with Dr. Robert Foreman. I will leave you once again with his website, souljazzonline.com is one of them, and also enlightenment8.com. And I invite you to discover some of his other shows. He's one of the original guests on this program, and we've had an entire series of conversations. So I invite you to discover those as well. So thanks again, everyone, for being here. I hope you find the peaceful moments in your flow. Maybe we'll all start to recognize that it quite labeled more and more. So take care, everyone. ¶¶